This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This week, Joy 94.9 is celebrating and acknowledging the generous contribution that volunteers make across the organisation throughout the year.
Close to 300 volunteers keep our voice out, loud and proud, on air and online at joy.org.au.
To all Joy volunteers, thanks for your contribution.
Give happy, live happy. National Volunteers Week, May 9 to 15.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Indeed it is. You are on Saturday Magazine. It is my great honour to welcome to Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Ayaan Hirsi-Ali. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And welcome to Australia and welcome to Joy.
Thank you very much and thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. You've come to Australia for the John Bonython lecture for the Centre for Independent Studies. That's a very important lecture. You're doing one in Sydney next week, I believe.
I did one in Melbourne.
Yep.
And yes, and there's an occasion in Sydney as well.
Fantastic. What's your initial impression of Australia, Ayaan?
Oh, I think I've lost count of how many times I've come to Australia.
Oh, okay.
I love it, and I love the people. I love the weather. It's just really out of the way. I have to say, it's very far away.
You have, I won't call it a rare distinction or an honour, but Al Qaeda have you on the list, on their list of, call it a death list. I wonder, can I ask, how does that feel?
Of course, it feels terrible to be on some hit list, but Al Qaeda has been threatening our way of life, not only me individually, but our way of life now for a very long time. In fact, Al Qaeda was established to fight and, designate as an enemy and put on a hit list the idea of freedom of speech and the equality between men and women and the right to life for gay people. So I know I'm on their hit list, but I think it would be an illusion for other people to think that they're not on their hit list.
Yeah, exactly. And you're in good company on that list, I might say. One of the issues that we're particularly interested in is the relationship between, or how radical Islam regards my community, the GLBTI community. And you only have to look at how that plays out in terms of, the treatment, the torture, the murdering of members of our community. I'd really like to hear your thoughts on that and how does this play out in an intellectual sense?
I think first and foremost, sexual orientation is something universal. It affects all humanity. And so it's not just your community. It is all of our community. And Muslims who happen to have an alternative sexual orientation hide that. They stay in the closet. And when it comes to the surface, their families tend to reject them, and some of them are killed, and some of them never come out of the closet. Radical Islam adds an extra component, and that is to kill and kill immediately, but also to preach that people with an alternative sexual orientation are deviant, that they are sinners, and that they should be deprived of their lives.
And good morning. It's Tass Musafiriadis here. Ayaan, great to speak with you this morning. And what about people who have diverse genders?
Excuse me, diverse what?
Diverse genders. People who may identify as a trans man or a trans woman or gender neutral for that matter.
The problem, I think, with Islamic doctrine is, because it's rooted in the 7th century, I'm not sure that they have thought that far along and have come along with science. and as you know, in the top 9 or 10 countries where homosexuality gets the death penalty, I mean, just being a homosexual is ready to, I mean, is enough for these people to kill you and to be killed by the government, let alone if you go so far as, you know, transgender. And I would say what science has permitted now, which is if you don't feel comfortable inside your body, then you can really have undergo surgery and change your gender. I think they see that as freakish and as an extension of everything else that they consider sinful.
Even though in Iran, that is a not uncommon occurrence for someone who is gay, particularly, to the government will assist with surgery, which I find just abhorrent. But I wanted to, in the most recent Australian federal budget, the government here has allocated a lot of money to de-radicalisation programs. As you'd be aware, we've had some instances of terrorism in Australia, as has every country, and de-radicalisation is one of the perhaps solutions that government thinks will help with this. How successful has de-radicalisation been around the world? And I'd love to hear your view on that.
I published an article in The Australian last weekend where I explained that it is not, these programs are not successful because they do not focus on the component of religion. So if you talk to any Muslim who was a former radical and who is de-radicalized, not through some government program, but through critical thinking and opening oneself up. I was a radical Muslim myself, but I opened my mind to alternative ideas. And what you see is you cannot really ignore the basic component of radicalization, which is Islamic doctrine itself.
Yeah.
And so you can't really talk to, you can't talk someone out of why jihad is fight and a rightful path unless you discuss jihad and its history and where it comes from and why it's bad.
Okay, in terms of you talk about, you know, of Islam and it hasn't moved on a lot from the 7th century. Do you, as an ex-radical Islamist yourself, and if I'm not wrong, you now would regard yourself as an atheist, do you think it's possible for Islam to remake itself, to become more relevant to the modern world, not just in a technological sense, but in a teaching sense? And is there a desire within Islam for that to happen? I know a lot of people I know would like that, but is there any desire within the religion, splintered as it is, for, you know, some modernization?
Absolutely. In my latest book, Heretic, I try to grapple with Muslim diversity, and I separate Islam as a doctrine from Muslims as the adherents. And I see three sets of Muslims. I see the ones that I call Medina Muslims, who want to emulate the Prophet Muhammad and the Quran in their Medina rendition. And there are millions and millions of Muslims who, you know, they observe or they try to observe the edicts that Muhammad left behind for worshipping. And I call them Mecca Muslims because in the first 10 years when Muhammad was preaching the faith, he didn't combine it with politics that much. And then there's this growing group of people that I'm really excited about, individuals who are thinking critically, and are saying, let's modify, let's change our attitude toward the religion. And you read about them, they're in big trouble now.
Yes.
You read about them in Bangladesh being hacked to death because they're blogging about why the separation, for instance, separation of religion from politics is important. And you see many of them also being imprisoned and killed in Iran, in Pakistan, and even in Saudi Arabia. I just want you to think about how extremely difficult it is for an individual in Saudi Arabia to stand up to the authorities in that dark kingdom and talk to them about human reason. And then what they do to them, like Raif Badawi, who's imprisoned, flogged, and humiliated, and is probably going to be put to death because of apostasy, but still is pressing on.
It's, look, I think most most people, a lot of people, not most people, a lot of people have a particular view of Islam, and I think one of the things that sticks in people's minds the most is the treatment of women and the the mutilation of women. You have some very, very strong views on this, which we'd love to hear.
Well, here's the funny thing. In modern Western liberal society, my opinion that women and men should be equal before the law and that women should own their own bodies is not radical or extreme or controversial. It is, in fact...
It's the law.
It's an attitude. Yes,
basic
it's the
right.
Law. Yes, we think we can take that for granted. But, of course, it is challenged on religious grounds by these Medina Muslims who are coming in and saying, no, the place that God has put women in is that of motherhood and virgin brides, and that they should submit completely to their husbands and their male guardians. Their fathers can give them away in marriage, and so completely taking away our freedom and our dignity as women. And I think the only way and the most important way to push back is, again, this separation of religion from politics. You cannot use your religion as a political tool to take away my freedoms, not just of women, but of gays, of people of other faith and people of no faith at all.
I think I want to commend you for your courage. You've lived an incredible life. You've been a very strong advocate. But what I really admire is your courage, but the intellectual rigor that you apply to what you're doing. And sure, it's an opinion, but it's based on fact. It's based on good analysis. And that is often what is missing in this debate. If I can just ask, I'm sure people have asked you, Donald Trump, do you find his view on Muslims, do you find that really disturbing? Or is it just, it's disturbing, but is it just ill-informed and he's doing what we call dog whistling?
It's ill-informed and it is alarming. I think a statement that says all Muslims should be banned from coming into the United States does not take into account the diversity, the complex diversity that we just talked about. What about those individuals who are risking their lives to reform the Islamic doctrine?
Yeah.
So would Mr. Trump shut the door to those Muslims? And by the way, they're also inside the United States of America, helping the American society and American government to grapple with the Medina Muslims and their radical agenda. So I think we have to understand that there are Muslims, numerous Muslims, that work with us and that we can work with, and not say that all Muslims are bad and all Muslims are evil. If you don't understand, if you can't make the distinction between the one who has a jihadi agenda and the one who doesn't, then yes, that is alarmingly simplistic.
Absolutely, that's a fantastic message for you to communicate with our listeners this morning. I was just going to ask you one other question, and that is, what are the key messages that you would like to leave our listeners with this morning? Because there are a lot of people out there who are very concerned about perceptions and attitudes towards Muslims. And you're absolutely right that we need to make a distinction between the jihadists and the non-jihadists. But how can we contribute towards a reformist agenda and help really to modernize some of these attitudes in some of these countries?
I think by not giving Muslims in general a pass when it comes to the critical scrutiny of their doctrine, just the way we don't give a pass to Christians with an extremist agenda, or any other religious group, or by the way, any other secular group. Remember Marxism?
Yes,
and of course.
So what we do is we apply this bigotry of low expectations to Muslims, and we say, you know, Islam is a religion of peace. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. There are only a few individuals out there who are perverting it. That is untrue. And it's not only untrue, I think it exacerbates the problem, but it's also guilty of the same simplicity that Mr. Trump is guilty of. So for me, the attitude of Barack Obama to Islam and the attitude of Donald Trump to Islam is just two sides of the same coin. If we really want to advance, and Muslims are one-fifth of humanity and we want to coexist with them peacefully, we have to scrutinize this doctrine, and we have to help and boost those within Islam who really want to transform it and to reform it, modify it, so that it is more humane and more in line with and respectful of people's freedoms, bodily integrity, and tolerant of diversity.
Ayaan, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the honour you've given us of speaking to you on our radio station. I wish you good on Q&A. It's a very robust program, Q&A. I think you'll enjoy it. Good luck on Radio National. And thank you again for giving us your time. I know how short it is. It's been fantastic for us and our listeners.
Thank you very much. And good luck with all that you do. And thank you for having me on.
It's been a great pleasure. That was Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who's in Australia. One of four interviews she's doing is on Joy 94.9. We're very proud of that. Mm. You are on Saturday Magazine. Stay tuned. There is more.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.